problems, do you think, in the way the NHS was set up, which have resulted in things going wrong ever since?
Okay, well, before we talk about the problems with the structure of the National Health Service and the way that it's set up, I think it's important to say, first of all, that obviously, in general terms, the setting up of a National Health Service was a very good idea. Inevitably, it meant that people who had not had access to medical care in the pre-war period, particularly, I think, married women, had access to a very good system of medical care, which was very important in improving the quality of their lives. So there's no doubt that the setting up of a National Health Service was a very progressive and important development. However, at the same time, I think that there were three major flaws in the way in which the National Health Service was actually set up, and that these were very fundamental to its creation. They weren't simply things to do with the administrative structure that could be tinkered with at a later stage, but were very fundamental aspects of the way in which people at the time thought about a National Health Service. I think the first problem really related to the question of power and control, the question of who was actually going to make decisions in the National Health Service. And although there was a dispute at the time over what the administrative structure should look like, there was no question that control should actually be left in the hands of basically doctors and senior administrators. So that the question of power or decision-making being given to either the majority of health workers or patients was not considered a serious possibility. Again, we could use the example of women to say that women constitute the majority of patients in the National Health Service, and they also constitute the majority of health workers. But if you actually look at the committees and the way in which power is distributed within the National Health Service, you find that women are almost entirely excluded. And I think the result of that has been that the National Health Service has been less flexible than it might otherwise have been in meeting the needs of the majority of both workers and patients in the health service.
What's number two?
Well, the second problem really is that too many concessions were actually made to the private sector, so that although it was called a National Health Service, and essentially it was, there were certain very important areas that were left outside the framework of the health service. The first obvious one would be the production of drugs and medical equipment and other kinds of supplies, which were left in the hands of private producers. And I think that that's had two main effects, really. The first has been to increase the cost of those services to the National Health Service, and it's meant that a considerable proportion of the budget has actually gone on drugs, for instance. And I think it's also had important effects on the way that medicine is practiced, because it's been in the interests of the drug industry to ensure that curative medicine rather than preventive medicine was actually the norm within the National Health Service. And I think the other aspect of the private sector that was important was the fact that private practice was allowed to continue, both inside the National Health Service in the form of pay beds and actually outside it as well. And I think this has been important symbolically as an example of privilege and the social differences that exist in our society. But it's also been practically important because it's diverted resources away from the National Health Service. And most importantly, it's allowed people who actually make decisions, I think, to escape from the worst rigors of the National Health Service and therefore to be less concerned with changing it than they might have been. And, of course, the question of private practice and the fact that it still exists is particularly important at the moment, since present government policy is to actually increase private practice outside the health service. And, obviously, this is going to reinforce the general kind of tendency to decline within the National Health Service. I think there's no doubt about that. But I think that the most serious flaw, really, in the setting up of the health service, it was that it was never really a National Health Service, but rather a National Sickness Service, by which I mean that it's always been concerned with providing medical care for existing conditions, but has actually paid much less attention to the whole question of the promotion of health itself. I suppose another way of putting this is to say that it's primarily been concerned with curative intervention and much less with prevention. One example of this would be the lack of any occupational health service. Work's a very important contributor to people's health and sickness, and people spend a great deal of time at work, but no state services are provided either to monitor conditions in the workplace or to provide individual care and advice. And I think this is very indicative of the whole approach, both in the setting up of the health service and in its subsequent history.
So you think that these three factors you've mentioned are having a continuing influence on the way the service operates now?
Oh, for sure. And I think the fact that it does was very well documented in the recent Black Report on inequalities in health. And I think, really, the effects can be divided into two kinds. The first is that the result has been that medical care itself is not yet equally distributed. It's still the case that there are very marked inequalities between social classes, both in the utilisation of health services and also in the quality of care that people actually get. But more importantly, the way in which the health service has been set up and the way in which it's actually operated has meant that class inequalities in health and illness have not narrowed. In other words, despite the existence of the National Health Service, it's still the case that a child with parents who are unskilled workers is about four or five times more likely to die during the first year of life than a child with professional parents. And similarly, at every age, working class people are more likely to die than their middle class counterparts, and they're also more likely to suffer from both acute and chronic illness. And I think this is something that we have to take very seriously, that we may have set up a National Health Service, but we haven't actually reduced class inequalities in health and illness. Now, the important thing to recognise is that these class differences in health and illness actually have relatively little to do with access to medical care, and much more to do with wider social and economic conditions, so that it's things like food, housing, environmental conditions and working conditions that actually determine people's health and illness, how long they'll live, what they'll die of, and so on. And it's the fact that the National Health Service hasn't taken this seriously that's been one of the most fundamental problems, I think.
Yeah. So would you, lots of people we've talked to have said that the health service isn't in crisis, and some people have said it's doing better than ever, in fact. What would be your judgment on that?
Well, I think most of the people who say that probably don't use the National Health Service, but actually use private medicine. If you talk to ordinary people who are using the health service every day, or ordinary health workers, then I think there would be very few who would say that the National Health Service was not in a serious state of decline. I don't think that means it's going to disappear overnight, because I don't think it'll do that. But I think the fact is that conditions are deteriorating very seriously in terms of things like waiting lists, the kind of care that people receive, how long doctors or other health workers will actually talk to them, how long they have to wait to get seen. All of the kind of things that are very important to people in their everyday lives are deteriorating at an alarmingly rapid pace. I could perhaps give two examples of close friends who've recently had experiences in the health service that have alarmed me very considerably. One of them was a friend who recently... Oh, stop, actually.
So what are your two examples?
Well, the first is a close friend who recently discovered that she had an abnormal cervical smear, and the consultant who she was seeing said that she needed laser treatment. He told her, naturally she was very distressed by this and very anxious. If you're told that you have an abnormal smear, that makes you very concerned. And clearly it was necessary to have urgent treatment. But he told her that if she waited to have it done on the National Health Service, then October was the earliest that it could be done. But that if she wanted to pay now, then it could be done next week. That he normally saw six NHS patients and two private patients in any one session, and therefore she could alleviate her own anxiety by paying. The second example was a friend who's only 22 with a breast lump who had a great deal of difficulty getting an outpatient appointment to actually have someone look at the breast lump, again a very anxiety-producing condition. When she rang the hospital for the second time to ask when she'd get an appointment, the receptionist asked her if she was on the pill. When she said that she wasn't, the receptionist said, didn't she realise that this meant that she was at much less risk than some other women who were on the pill, and therefore she would have to wait until they'd been seen before she could get an appointment. Now, to me, that seems like a crisis, that people have problems of this kind and not able to get access to medical care simply and easily and without problems. That's a crisis.
Thank you.